Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. Or you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm happy to have as my guest John Haskell, who is the author of three books. The most recent, Out of My Skin, has come out as what's known as a paperback original from Farrar, Straus & Giroux. His other books were published by them as well, I Am Not Jackson Pollock and American Purgatorio. Now, I noticed that Out of My Skin has a lot of references to paradise in it. They're coming to California looking for paradise. And since the last book was Purgatorio, is it the paradise volume of a trilogy?
My editor said not to stress that fact. But yes, I was thinking of it in terms of the three books, kind of maybe after the fact. I Am Not Jackson Pollock, which started out as stories sometimes said aloud or performed. One of them, I think, was originally called Hell is a Million Degrees. So it actually had, it had, and I had in the back of my mind that idea. So yes, yeah.
Well, I had kind of thought so. What I said in the back of my mind about I Am Not Jackson Pollock is that hell, at least according to Sartre, is other people. And, you know, the stories in that book offer famous lives to try on for size. And ultimately, hell is other people. One's inability to imagine oneself as being other, people's inability to leave themselves, to step outside themselves and create a new life after a certain point. And that seems to be the subject of all three of the books. How does one, what does one do when identity is no longer functioning very well? It's been traumatized or frightened, and it needs to create new resources for itself. And it seems that the books in regard to this problem have a variety of attitudes ranging from alienated to Buddhist, that it seems as if loss of identity, at least in these works, is a sort of spiritual state.
Yes, I think it is, and not just loss of identity, but what is identity? I mean, which is a more spiritual question, I suppose. I hate to use that word. But what is identity? Who is the person who is in this body? Who is the? What is the body? All those things are interesting to me and kind of a riddle that is maybe in some, you know, quote, religions might be solved, but I think I almost prefer that it's insoluble and a mystery that you can keep going into. Maybe I'll stop going into it, but it is, to me, interesting, yeah.
And it seems as well that even if you look at a book like Nausea by Jean-Paul Sartre, the language still is very baroque. Your language seems to be very broken down and plain, a kind of state where people are not inventing phantasmagorias of their misery involving fancy language. Instead, it seems to be a zero-degree state.
I think I know what you mean. And if this is a response, I just want to be the most honest about what's in front of what's going on. In terms of the two, last two, it's first person. Just what is there? And I find, or I don't even, maybe haven't thought about it, but I think sometimes flowery language or Baroque languages, you say, maybe you get lost in the language a little bit, and I want to just say what is right there to see and hear and know and try to know. I've been reading a lot of often I come to books, and I've been reading some reviews lately that talk about metaphor, and I'm really oddly ambivalent about, you know, brilliant metaphors, beautiful metaphors, because I like them, you know, the glass is like a silver curtain or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's also, you know, and I love it, but I'm very ambivalent about it.
But I notice at the same time, although you don't tend to use metaphors, the works seem to be metaphorical, large metaphors, overarching metaphors. In fact, I'll tell you what I mean. We'll begin by reading the first section of the book, and I think it will lead us to a kind of interesting or peculiar discussion about metaphor.
Okay.
This is John Haskell reading the first section of Out of My Skin. I want to point out the book takes place in Los Angeles, and each section, except for this first one, has a picture mostly of neighborhoods in Los Angeles. And funny, because for so many writers, Los Angeles is hell, but for this writer, it seems to be standing in for paradise. John Haskell.
What happened to me was not me, but what happened. I'm from New York originally, and I moved to Los Angeles to write about movies. Now, instead of writing about movies or people making movies, I was somewhere off the California coast in the middle of the ocean writing an article about sharks. A group of scientists had rigged up a fishing boat with winches and scientific instruments, and they'd lowered a stainless steel cage into the water. They were investigating shark communication, and because I was writing an article about their investigation, I was inside the cage. I was under the water, wearing a wetsuit, and under the wetsuit there were sensors attached to various parts of my body, measuring my heart rate and brain activity. And partly I was thinking about brain activity, but mainly I was thinking about sharks. They pretty much guaranteed me a shark attack, something about an anomaly in the ocean current, and so I stood there, or I should say, I floated there, my back to the boat's hull, holding the steel handrail, listening to the air as it passed from the scuba gear into my lungs. That, plus the pressure of the water, plus the temperature of the water, plus the fact that there was going to be a shark attack, was focusing my attention. Speckled sunlight was filtering down from the surface of the water, and schools of little fish were darting out from the darkness. I noticed pieces of meat floating above the cage. The scientists were chumming for sharks, and the blood from the meat was dissolving in the water. Through the mask on my face, I was scanning the water, looking for a shark, knowing the minute I stopped looking, the minute I took my mind off the idea of shark like a watched pot, that's when a shark would appear. And because I didn't want to miss that appearance, I kept my mind focused on the darkness in front of me, not thinking about anything other than the barely visible darkness. But I must have been thinking something, and it must have been in the middle of thinking it when a white underbelly flashed by, huge and white and slightly above me. Suddenly, the bait was gone. The bait was gone, and the shark was gone, but I was still there, and I didn't know what the scientists, looking at the data from my sensors, were recording, but it probably was fear. My heart was pounding, and my adrenaline was pumping, and I could feel my fingertips pulsing inside my rubber gloves. I'd seen enough of the shark to feel its threat, but because I was protected by the safety of the cage, what would normally seem like fear felt to me like the opposite of fear. Not desire exactly, because I couldn't actually see the shark, but I was aware of something just beyond my vision. And when I say aware, I mean I was sensing from the shark a kind of communication. And since the most rudimentary form of communication is the expression of desire, I was sensing the shark's desire. And since one of the things it was desiring was my annihilation, well, I can't say there wasn't a certain amount of fear. What I was trying to do was reach out through that fear and communicate with this thing. Oh, the human brain is capable of receiving millions of neural signals. And I was trying, from inside the cage, to send signals to the shark. I wanted to tell the shark that I understood what it wanted and that I accepted what it wanted. And I was just beginning to get into this interspecies conversation when I felt the cage begin to rise. The scientists were bringing me up out of the water. I didn't want to go out. And I tried to tell them. I tried to signal through the sensors attached to my body that I wasn't ready, that I was still conducting the experiment. I tried to think these thoughts and send those thoughts. And maybe the sensors weren't working. Or maybe my thoughts weren't working. Either way, I felt the weight of the water pushing me down as the cage rose up like an elevator. And there I was again in the breathable normalcy of air.
John Haskell, reading from the first section of Out of My Skin. Now, what I mean when I say that the work is metaphorical, that experience of being in a cage, protected from the shark, becomes the character's wonderful idea for how to live. That if he can build a cage around himself, he'll be protected from the attacks of external life. And throughout the book, people play with things that will be like a mask or a cage. The characters will wield cameras at each other in order to create a protective space or force the other person into an idea of performance or at any rate to allow the picture taker to retire. And it seems as if the metaphor for the book carried on at length is one of building the cage, exploring the cage, and perhaps doing without the cage.
I think that's the arc of the story in a way. The difficulty of all that, of how, I mean, in this case, just building the cage and finding and learning how to make a cage and not so much cage as mask or some sort of protective thing that lets us be in the world more fully in a way, becomes so the first part of the story. And then at a certain point, that mask or cage or protective thing gets in the way of something more, of a, maybe a fuller understanding or a fuller experience of the world. And then, but once you have this thing, you've spent so much time building this thing, then what do you, then how do you get rid of it? It's like, not an addiction, but it's like a habit. It is a, yeah.
This narrator, whose name happens to be Jack Haskell, and I don't want to go too far in identifying him with the author, has, well, you know, we come out here to make movies and we don't make movies. We come to Los Angeles to write about movies and we don't get jobs writing about movies. So before long, he's writing about the next best thing, maybe sharks, but not actors. He's writing about someone who does celebrity impersonations, in particular one who specializes in Steve Martin. And it seems to Jack to be such a comfortable thing to know what to do at all the time, even when you're being zany, to know exactly how to be zany, to be urbane, or in the latter part of Steve Martin's career, paternal and white-haired and, you know, just, you know, unsurprisable and present. And so, although he looks nothing like Steve Martin, neither does the celebrity impersonator. Good for the opening of parking lots at children's parties, a way of making money in a foreign city. And so he begins to feel that Steve Martin is a state of mind, one that he might attain to allow him to feel some comfort level in the world, because the metaphor requires in response to sharks, a cage or a mask against fear. Fear is the great equalizer.
I think so, and so the mask then becomes just the identity, and I guess my idea or what I'm suggesting or what I'm exploring is the idea that our identities, our personalities, are those masks, cage, obviously, and it's I don't know if it's funny, but Steve Martin himself, the famous actor, is sort of secondary or tertiary because he really is intrigued by this lookalike and models himself. So it becomes a made up, having nothing to do with the reality of Steve Martin, but based on a lookalike and then his idea of a lookalike.
So he models himself on someone who models himself on Steve Martin.
If I follow that, yes.
And he has come to a point, as did Jackson Pollock in your story, I Am Not Jackson Pollock, where his Steve Martin state of mind is so dependable that he begins to feel uncomfortable in it, that it's preventing him, in fact, from expressing the things that made him afraid of the world to begin with, and that now not very much truth about himself is leaking out through the mask.
Mm-hmm.
So what might have sounded like a comic novel is actually a novel of existential anxiety.
Yes. I'll say yes. It's anxiety and there's existentialness about it, yeah.
Yeah.
But also I think it's funny. I don't know. Did you find it?
It's an anxious comedy.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a comedy where the broader aspects are avoided and the more intimate, niggling, frightening minutiae of self-examination. In other words, the hero seems less like an American comic hero and more like, say, the hero of The Stranger, someone who is feeling his lack of connection in the world and begins to wonder, how do I describe my lack of connection accurately?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with John Haskell, author most recently of Out of My Skin, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with John Haskell about his new novel, Out of My Skin. Now, a good deal of the writing you've been doing involves a certain kind of documentary aspect. In this book, there are notes about Bertolt Brecht's first English production of his play Galileo, which he worked on with Charles Laughton, the movie, both Double Indemnity and Sunset Boulevard enter, as does Detour. Los Angeles used to be a place that people came in order to sell out, as they used to call it. In Hollywood storytelling, a way for a person to have an adventure is to give up their identity, to take a new identity card. It happens in Detour, and it happens in North by Northwest, another film that gets explored. But it seems as if what your work is saying is the famous are the famous. These are things that happen every day. And we don't sell out only when we're given the multi-million dollar contract. We lose our identity or take on another identity every time we say something hypocritical or even just slightly insecure. That this book is about the hundreds of ways that the self can lose its truthfulness, its straightforwardness, just by walking around in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Is it something that you fear?
It's something I don't know if I consciously fear that. I mean, I think anyone would want to try to live, authentically, truthfully. I guess I do think about it. Of course, in writing, you think about it, how to present the most truthful thing. And I suppose the idea of self, of personality, is something that interests me. You know, I've done a little bit of meditation, and as one goes farther into it, there is the idea of the sense of self sort of going away, and I don't know if that's nirvana or not, or some sort of something, but I have had experiences when, and just sometimes just randomly, when I seem to have left myself and I'm not there to bother myself. And wow, what a pleasure when I'm not getting in my way and the world's just there.
Because the books do seem to me the alternative to the state of constant self-consciousness and anxiety seems to be an anxiety-free state that is like meditation. Sometimes it involves forgetting the body. There's a Tarzan rope in one of the sequences in this book where, swinging out over one of the canyons, the guy feels his body consciousness going and he just feels like he's carried by air. But it seems to be the desirable state.
There is a sense, one thing that ran through this book and in earlier iterations of it that didn't get published is the sense of utopia, which also has a lot of attitudes toward it. But then again the paradise thing, and I was thinking of the idea of utopia, especially in this time we're living in now. It seems to me that, well, I wrote this actually before the election, so maybe I was prescient. But it was a time of just nothing was going on in terms of literature. Okay, we've done it all. Everything's been done. It's sort of blind alleys everywhere. And I wanted to also explore the idea of, and it did get cut, but there was a quote in an earlier version, Susan Sontag, who talked about the 60s, a marvelous time of forward-looking and utopianism, and that she was sorry that time has faded. And I am too, but I think it may be the seed of it, just as, not to get political, but just, you know, I think Obama's mother was sort of a hippie and the hippies died and then this seed came to fruition. I think I'd like to think that a sense that kind of I'd also like to say I'm too young for the 60s, but that sense of utopianism is something that I am nostalgic for.
Well, I think that it's true that your novels harken back to a time in American writing when life felt more literary and literature and its freedom of ideas and invention seemed more beautiful, but just as available as life. In a certain sense, the character here is trying to find a kind of literary place where his anxieties would be, to some extent, ennobled. They'd be serious, like the anxiety, say, in Walker Percy's The Moviegoer, where he might be able to escape, maybe into an idea of the movies, when movies were serious, when you can be an artist working on movies, and even a brilliant critic writing about movies. Now, most of the movie critics, alas, are not brilliant, and most of the artists making movies are not artists. So what is there for this character? This character is trying to teach himself perhaps the most difficult thing to learn. How can he live an ordinary life given the absence of the realm of the extraordinary that used to be provided by the art experience?
I like that, and I hope that's there. We're also forgetting a big word, love, because in a way it's a simple love story also. Simple love story. I don't know what love is, but to the extent that barrierlessness that he might be striving for is a way to approach an intimacy or intimacy with another person is probably, and that's old-fashioned too. Love is an old-fashioned story, and I think that's part of it. I'm sort of romantic in that way, or old-fashioned, or it's just sort of a Hollywood aspect to it, that it is a sort of a love story in that, I hate to say it, but profounder way.
I've been speaking with John Haskell, author most recently of Out of My Skin, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you, John, for joining me.
Thank you.
You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.